will spread thunderstorms into Iowa and Missouri tomorrow and Wednesday, while warm and dry conditions will prevail east of the Mississippi River. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, partly sunny with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high of 82. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 58. The wind will be out of the south from 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy with a high of 83. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour, increasing to 20 to 25 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 57. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. The outlook for Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 80s. The wind will be out of the south at 10 to 15 with gusts to 25 miles per hour. And the outlook for Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 60. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the 60s and 70s. A mix of sun and cloud reported in Illinois, and some Chicago suburbs reported rain. At Rockford, it was 65 degrees. At O'Hare, 68. In Bloomington, 74. Mattoon, 72. Carbondale, 76. At South Bend, 77. It was 79 degrees at Terre Haute and Lafayette. And in Indianapolis, 78 degrees. Willard Airport reported 77 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 61. The relative humidity, 57%. The wind out of the south at 17 with gusts to 23. The barometric pressure, 30.03 and falling. It was partly sunny. And on the campus of the University of Illinois at 1239, 76 degrees. On the campus of the University of Illinois. A McHenry County farmer who's married to a Democrat, a stay-at-home mom active with Downers Grove Republicans, and a conservative blogger from Wilmette who identifies with the Tea Party. Over the past 3 months, Sam Hutzig has chatted with these GOP voters as they tried to pick a presidential candidate.
Eva Surak and I are sitting in the kitchen of the beautiful Wilmette house she shares with her husband Herb and their three cats.
It's a very old house, as Illinois goes. 1931 it was built. We love it. We love the area. Love the neighborhood.
Eva is 65 and says she's lived a charmed life on the North Shore. Her kids are grown, though the family still gets together on Sundays for a lively dinner.
Even within a relatively conservative little family situation, we have huge arguments. I mean, not arguments, but discussions where people disagree on different things.
Eva was a journalist years ago. These days she writes a blog called Conservative Brand. Eva is a Tea Partier, but she says, unlike some in the movement, she's been politically involved for years. She was on the school board, lost some friends that way.
It didn't have a huge effect. While I was on the school board, I didn't change anything. But I do think it's like a really good example to your children that that's what people have to do in a representative constitutional democracy.
Eva approached her presidential vote this year with that same feeling of responsibility. When I first started talking with her, she felt the frontrunners at the time, Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney, were extremely flawed. This is from December.
We kind of feel like we've already given in and held our noses and tried for the moderate with McCain, and now in a much more dire situation where the country is heading in a very bad direction, we're being asked to hold our noses and vote for another moderate that we don't trust.
A few weeks later, after Iowa and New Hampshire voted, Eva was still looking for the right conservative. She'd warmed a bit to Gingrich, liked his ability to talk with authority about things like the free market, and Eva praised Rick Santorum for his integrity, but felt this wasn't the right election to focus so strongly on social issues, even ones she agreed with. She was still skeptical of Santorum when we talked a month later.
His personality, it seems horrible that you have to worry about that when people like Nixon got elected, who really had a bad personality. I mean, but he does come out as kind of a sourpuss.
Eva said if the election were held then, in late February, she'd probably vote for Gingrich. We'll get to her final decision in just a bit. First, I want to introduce you to Harry Alton.
The corn stalks come through here, and those knives down there actually pull it through because they're rotating. They travel at 16 feet a second, and they just keep pulling it through.
At the farm he shares with his brother in northern McHenry County, Harry guides me through a maze of equipment. They used to grow everything from onions to sweet peppers to butternut squash. Now they stick to corn and soybeans and restore antique tractors. He's also involved in ag groups like the Farm Bureau. He calls this his semi-retirement.
I'm 73 years old, and I can't stop now. You know, if I were to sit at home and watch TV all day, I think I'd go nuts.
Harry is a Republican, though he supports Democrats if they're strong on ag. This bipartisanship also applies to his marriage. His wife, Jerry.
She's a Democrat and I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative and she's a liberal. She wants to help everybody do everything, you know, from cradle to grave. And I don't think that's right. I think you should earn it.
When we talked in December, Harry was not impressed with any of the candidates, but was leaning toward Romney.
Honest, open, and sincere, you know, and that's, maybe it's just, When I used to hire employees, too, first impressions always made it for me.
Still, none of the candidates were giving Harry what he wanted on one issue. Farmers need immigrant labor, he says, and was disappointed with Republicans' hard line. Then in mid-January, Harry heard Gingrich talk about a compromise.
It was, let's say, a qualified answer. It was a start.
Is that enough of an answer from Gingrich to make you start thinking more seriously about whether you'd vote for him?
Shifting my mind a little bit, but I said he still got the baggage of his personal life, and that, you know, I have looked at Playboy, so I'm not completely immoral, but I mean, I just don't understand that morality in a person's life, and I've been married 44 years to the same woman, and I don't mean to judge him morally, but in the back of my mind, I am.
We'll check back with Harry in a few minutes, right after you meet Amy Shainos Kovacevich. Amy has been a leader in young Republicans groups and is actually on the ballot herself in Downers Grove tomorrow, running for precinct committeeman.
I got started back in 1984 with my dad, and I was 9 years old, and my dad ran for his first time as Republican precinct committeeman here in Downers Grove Township.
She walked door to door with him. Amy's 36 now, and GOP through and through. She even met her husband at a Republican Party event. When we started talking 3 months ago, she was as undecided as could be, genuinely weighed down by the importance of her one vote. In each conversation, she talked about how she needed to do more research on the candidates and how she wished she could roll up all of their good qualities into a single super candidate.
That is the ultimate goal, is who will be successful in beating Obama.
In our final interview last week, Amy told me Santorum was out because she worried he wouldn't appeal to moderates in the general election. She narrowed her pick to either Gingrich or Romney, but wouldn't give a final answer.
I really thought at this time I would have really been sold on a candidate, and I'm just not. And I'm hearing that from other voters as well.
Our farmer from McHenry County, Harry, is sold on a candidate. Harry already early voted for the guy he's been leaning to from the beginning, Romney, and he says he wants this campaign wrapped up.
Because right now, all it's doing is creating fodder for the Democratic Party. You know, more negative. They have more ammunition now, and we're providing it.
That's not the way Eva, our Tea Partier from Wilmette, sees it. She wants the fight to continue.
Well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to vote for Rick Santorum.
Her vote is not that simple, though. She'll pick Santorum for president, but on the vote that matters, delegates to the Republican convention, Eva will vote for those aligned with Gingrich because she says they're Tea Partiers and could raise a ruckus at the convention. Still, if Romney prevails, Eva will vote for him, though unenthusiastically, against President Obama.
What I say to my friends that are so gung-ho for Romney, you know, say you win, you get out there and fight for this guy because don't ask the Tea Party people, who are actually the worker bees of the conservative movement, don't ask us to stuff envelopes and walk door to door for a candidate that we were ambivalent about to start with. And that's probably what will guarantee Obama wins.
Even though she sounds a touch defeated, Eva says she believes in the American system.
You know, I'm glad I spent all the time thinking about it and agonizing over it, and all these regrets about the Mitch Daniels or whatever, or Herman Cain, whoever I thought I'd like, you know, it's not really worth dwelling on because it wasn't part of the plan in the end.
Eva, I'm a long-suffering Cubs fan, and you sound like me in like late September.
It's not about winning. It's just about hoping to win.
And that will be our last word. Many thanks to Eva Sirak, Harry Alton, and Amy Shanos-Kovacevic for letting us into their heads these past few months. Tomorrow night, after the polls close, we'll find out how all the other Illinois Republicans feel. I'm Sam Hutzik.
For more election coverage, visit WILL.illinois.edu/election. Illinois Public Media News is always online at WILL.illinois.edu.
WILL news reporters and contributors won 6 awards in the 2011 Associated Press Journalism Excellence Contest, including Best Investigative Series, Best Documentary Series, and Best Sports Story. Reporters Sean Powers, Jeff Bossert, Jim Meadows, Tom Rogers, and Dave Dickey, along with commentator Lisa Braltz and Pam Dempsey of CU Citizen Access, were recognized in the contest's Downstate Radio Division. Congratulations to them and to you for making this coverage possible.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 19th of March, 2012. It was on this day, 1842, that Balzac's play, Les Ressources de Canola, opened at the Odeon Theater in Paris. Balzac had a brilliant idea to publicize the play by starting a rumor that the play was completely sold out. He thought people would come to see what all the excitement was about. But instead, nobody came, assuming they couldn't get tickets, and the theater was almost empty for opening night. It's the birthday of Moms Mabley, the comedian, born in Brevard, North Carolina, 1894. Her parents died in separate accidents. She was raped twice as a teenager, had 2 children by rape who were taken from her. She was being forced into a marriage with an older man. When she ran away, went to Cleveland, met the black vaudeville team Butterbeans and Susie, became very successful on the Chitlin circuit, earning more than $10,000 a week at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, doing raunchy humor dressed in a frumpy dress and a floppy hat. Moms Mabley, who said, "A woman's a woman until the day she dies, but a man's only a man as long as he can." It's the birthday of the novelist Philip Roth, born Newark, New Jersey, 1933. Father was an insurance salesman, parents both children of Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe. Roth was an English teacher at the University of Chicago, where he met Saul Bellow, who told him he should keep writing. He was 26 when he published his first book, a novella and short stories titled Goodbye Columbus, and it was a big hit, won the National Book Award. He wrote 2 novels, which got mixed reviews, then for 5 years didn't publish anything, and then came Portnoy's Complaint, 1969. It was the best-selling book of that year. Philip Roth has been publishing short novels. In 2009, The Humbling, 140 pages, the story of a famous stage actor in his mid-60s who suddenly finds that his talent is gone. His 31st book, Nemesis, came out in 2010. And it's the birthday of the Russian writer born in Ukraine, Nikolai Gogol, born 1809. His father owned a vodka distillery, had more than 300 serfs. Gogol went to college, then went off to St. Petersburg, ready to take on the world. He tried acting, but he failed at that. And then he tried writing short stories based in rural Ukraine. And his first book, Evenings on a Farm near Dekanka, was a big success. A few years later, the play The Government Inspector, a satirical play on Russian bureaucracy, but everybody liked it, including the Tsar. And it's the birthday of Richard Francis Burton, born in Torquay, England, 1821. He loved languages, learned Arabic at Oxford, and it was Burton who gave us the definitive English translation of the Arabian Nights, and then later the Kama Sutra. Here's a poem for today by James Wright, entitled March. A bear under the snow turns over to yawn. It's been a long, hard rest. Once as she lay asleep, her cubs fell out of her hair, and she did not know them. It is hard to breathe in a tight grave. So she roars, and the roof breaks. Dark rivers and leaves pour down. When the wind opens its doors in its own good time, the cubs follow that relaxed and beautiful woman outside to the unfamiliar cities of moss. March, a poem by James Wright. From Above the River, the Collected Poems, published by Wesleyan University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Constant Contact, now offering social campaigns, a new tool designed to help small businesses turn fans into customers. Learn more at constantcontact.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The U.S. healthcare system is huge, really huge.
The American healthcare system.